Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
I was 10 years old when I first met the being who would haunt me for the rest of my life. Growing up, my father spent long days away, toiling away at his construction job, giving me free rein of the house. He'd entrusted me with a key, which every morning before school, I'd slip under a flower pot by the front step and use to get in. My friends thought I was living every kid's dream, and in a way, I was. When I got home, I would either kick off my shoes at the front door and bounce off to go watch cartoons, or go outside and play in the front lawn until the bright suburban days darkened into a misty orange haze. It was on that day when I found myself indoors, watching reruns of my favourite cartoons, when I felt a sudden presence on my bladder. Shifting the large bowl of popcorn off my lap, I headed upstairs to the bathroom. Just as I was turning a corner on the landing, I saw her. She was wearing what had once been a long white summer dress, now torn and smeared a reddish brown with colour. Her stomach seemed to have been scooped out, to the point a shaft of light from the window behind her shone through her exposed flesh, intestines trailing down past her knees like some macabre bridal train. Her hair fell over her pale face in ropey, dishevelled strands, almost completely obscuring it, pale limbs twitching at her sides as she blocked my way. There was something static about her presence, as if she was about to fade out of existence at any moment. Her head tilted up to look at me with a throaty groan. She wore the saddest expression I'd ever seen, that even now I find myself struggling to describe. It was as if she was seeing a whole world crumble around her. Of course, I responded the way any typical child would, by running screaming from my house and into the safety of a bemused next-door neighbours who promptly called the cops. They searched every inch of the house, but they couldn't find any sign of a break-in. My hysterical state didn't do anything to aid their questions. I tried to describe what I'd seen to them, but my words came out as tangled, sobbing gibberish. My father was even less understanding when he arrived home from a long day to find blue flashing lights in the driveway and police officers swarming the house. Believing it to be a prank, he offered them a lengthy apology. After exhausting all other options, the police came to that conclusion too, and after giving a stern warning to me about the misuse of emergency services, they'd left me to deal with the inevitable fallout. I had made a feeble attempt to explain what I'd seen to him, but he wasn't in the mood to hear it. He just sent me to bed after a few gruff, angry words, which seemed to comprise most of our interactions back then. It was as if he couldn't stand me being around. In the end, I stopped trying to tell him. I knew he'd never believe me. I couldn't sleep that night. I kept thinking that the second I closed my eyes, I would feel her bony hands wrap around my ankles and drag me into the endless darkness beneath my bed. But as dawn peeked through my blinds and there was no sign of her, I found myself heaving a heavy sigh of relief. I resigned her to my nightmares, where she would stay for a very long time. As I shuffled out of my room in my pajamas to go downstairs and get some breakfast, I found myself face to face with her, a few feet from where I'd originally seen her on the landing, just hovering there. I remember the steady pulse of my heart halting in my chest, the bleary-eyed ennui of the morning replaced by dry-mouthed terror, the kind that few people ever experience in their lives. It was to become a familiar feeling for the next few years. Whenever I seemed to turn, she was there. When I climbed up the stairs, she would always be waiting at the top, looking down at me. Her head would poke out from behind doorways, fingers coiled around the wooden frame, Soon, it wasn't just the house I saw her in anymore. From my seat in the school bus, I would see her staring out the front porch, not far from my stop. No matter where I was, she was there. Every Christmas, every birthday, just hovering out of my peripheral vision. There was no escape. As well as her, I found myself haunted by a single question. Why? Why me? I didn't understand why she chose to haunt me, of all the billions of children in the world. What had I done wrong to deserve this? Surely there were worse kids out there who deserved something like this. If she knew the answers, they remained sealed away behind her silent lips. It was one night when I was 12, when I had been woken by a soft humming that filtered into my ears. It was a wordless melody I could almost swear I'd heard before, but so far back that I couldn't remember anything else. Ragged fingernails encrusted with black, dried blood combed through my scalp. In my hazy state between consciousness and sleep, I'd taken it to be a dream. I found myself leaning into the invisible hand that cradled my face like a starving man who had just found food. I never realized until that moment how long it had been since someone had held me. Any interactions with my father consisted of general talk. Physical contact was non-existent. In the faint crack of light that streamed through my half-open door, I made out the shrouded figure seated on the edge of my bed. I could have died right then and there. In all the time she'd haunted me, she never seemed to violate the sanctity of my room. I thought that it was the one place I'd be safe from her. Now, here she was, just inches away. I found myself paralyzed by fear if the slightest shift in weight would morph her caressing fingers into claws that would skewer my skull. My ears picked up on a soft melody, one I soon realized was coming from her, wheezed out through fluid-drowned lungs, one that seemed vaguely familiar. She pulled herself closer until she was inches over me. My overworked heart felt seconds away from a coronary as her hum filled my ears. I couldn't take it anymore. I exploded from the covers and took off running down the hallway, propelled by pure animal instinct. I just wanted to get away as far away from her as possible. The floor lifted from my feet, and I found myself flung forward into the dark void, impacting on several edges before my limp body rolled to a stop at the bottom of the stairs. Despite the pain searing through my sprained shoulder, I tried to steady myself to my feet when I saw the female outline that had materialized at the very top of the staircase. My heart plummeted into the pits of my stomach, my sobs mixing with terrified breaths as I rolled around in a desperate attempt to regain balance. She hovered down towards me, as weightless as air, arms wide and reaching for me. There was no way I was going to get out of this. She finally had me. The lights exploded on upstairs, and the figure vanished into thin air. My pajama-clad father thundered down the steps. As soon as I saw the exhausted rage on his face, I found myself wishing for her return. Due to his job depending on physical alertness, my father prioritized a good night's sleep above anything else. No matter what happened, he would always be in bed by 9. Whenever something awoke him, he would be like an angry bear. That night, he had enough. He wrenched me up by the shoulders and started dragging me upstairs. Not wanting to face her again, I tried with every ounce of strength in my body to resist. But with him being at least twice my weight and height, I was little more than air to him. He jabbed a stubbed finger into the darkness of the corner, shoving me out. "There," he snapped, spittle spraying out. "Look, there's nothing there. No ghost, nothing." As soon as I blinked, she was there, staring out at me with those same dark, mournful eyes, her pale form caked with gore. I was so transfixed with my own terror that I didn't realize that my father had gone quiet. Her face changed with the sight of my father, her thin lips pursing as if she was about to say something. My father froze where he stood, arms still extended out towards the spot where she was standing. Though his face remained as stern as ever, the blood had drained, leaving his complexion marble-like. As I squinted closer, I saw trembles in his hands. Just as randomly as she had phased into existence, the bleeding woman was gone. My father heaved out a breath, the colour returning to his cheeks. I reached a trembling hand towards him, but he shrugged his bulky form away. "Bed," he muttered gruffly. I shuffled into my room with my head bowed, flinching as his own door slammed behind me. I knew better than to disobey his orders. I clambered back into bed, burying myself as deep as I could beneath the covers so that she wouldn't find me. But the relief of sleep never came. The moment replayed over in my head. He had seen her too. The subsequent morning at the breakfast table had been spent in tight-lipped silence, with both of us refusing to acknowledge what had transpired the previous night. School and work had been a welcome reprieve for the both of us, as we had lost ourselves in the safe monotony of everyday routine, where ghosts and things that went bump in the night didn't exist. A week after it had happened, I had come home from school when a series of heavy footsteps from above had shaken small fragments of plaster from the ceiling. Immediately, my already taxed heart thundered into overdrive, mind consumed with images of a hideous visage. The distant sound of a male clearing his throat from upstairs shattered my fear. Dad? What was he doing home so early? Against my better reasoning, I tiptoed up the stairs, wincing at the slightest creak that might give away my presence. I heard him trot around behind the half-closed bedroom door. Through the half-open door, my father seated himself on the bed, the mattress beneath groaning in protest. A bottle of wine was gripped in one hand, along with something silver-lined and rectangular in the other. But what I saw in there had me frozen where I stood. He was crying. In all the time I'd known him, my father had been a rock. A brick had once fallen from a scaffold at work and shattered his leg. He had barely even flinched. But there he was, tears rolling down his cheeks and soaking into his open palms. From the bleary, reddened state of his eyes, he looked like he had been doing it for a few hours. A strange sympathy washed over me. I knew I was looking at something I wasn't supposed to, something so much deeper than I could ever understand. I slunk away from the door and left my father to weep himself into an inebriated sleep. I found myself pulled back to the room, feeling bold enough to creak open the door and sneak into the room. My father lay sprawled on the bed, the half-down bottle of wine still gripped in his hand, his broad chest shaking with thunderous snores. Clutched to his chest was the elusive silvery object, the one that had piqued my magpie fascination. I'd slid it out from my father's hands, just softly enough as to not stir him, although eliciting a murmured snore. I had taken a step back, holding it upwards towards a light that streamed in through the adjacent bedroom window. My father smiled back at me from the photograph within the frame, younger and clean-shaven. He was dressed in an immaculate black suit with a knife in hand that was half sunk into the top tier of a wedding cake, adorned with ribbon flowers. He stood, surrounded by similarly dressed people, their faces obscured by the camera flash. It was only when I shifted my hand that I saw the figure beside him in the trailing white dress, her face obscured by my thumb. When I lifted the picture up to inspect it, my heart stopped mid-beat. Next to my father, her gloved hand clutched tight in his, was the woman who had haunted me for years. Her dark hair was pinned up in a bun, half squinting into the camera with a deliriously happy grin on her face. The red she was splattered in was nowhere to be seen, just pure white. The simple lace trim she wore only accentuated her effervescent beauty. I had never seen such adoration on anyone's face before in the way my father looked at her. It was as if he was staring at the very source of his life. My lip trembled as the grim realization hung over me. I turned to the half-open doorway and saw her hovering there, her mouth fallen in a downturned crescent. Only now, I understood her expression and the deep sadness ingrained in it. I found the rest out later. My mother had been just a week away from her due date when a similarly pregnant neighbour had invited her over to have some old baby clothes of hers. My mother, having always prided herself on being a thrifter, had jumped at the chance. Only, the neighbour didn't have any baby clothes. Just a pair of scissors. That same neighbour would turn up to the emergency ward 2 hours later with my bloodied newborn self in her arms, claiming to have given birth. But a quick examination by the doctors showed that the uterus and ovaries that were still attached to me, along with a half-severed umbilical cord, weren't hers. In court, she claimed that she was afraid her husband was going to leave her, so she faked a pregnancy. But as the date of delivery approached, she realized that she needed a baby, by any means necessary. The police found my mother in the basement. Her body had been stuffed into a trash bag, stewing in her own congealing blood. She had been ripped open from the crotch to sternum, her innards pulled past the knees, but her slashed, rigor mortis stiffened hands were still protectively clutching around her belly. Nearly every part of her was slathered with red, except for two clear streaks running down the sides of her face. The only reason my father hadn't been with her was because he was out buying a crib that he'd been saving up for months to put in the nursery they'd been decorating together. He wanted to surprise her. He'd never blamed me for her death, not for one moment. After the sentence had been passed, my father had moved me away from the media furore that surrounded the case and spent the first few years of my life moving from town to town, determined to keep me from ever finding out the grim story of how I had come into this world. So, when I started ranting on about a lady covered in blood in the house, it had scared him more than anything. The night she appeared before him convinced him it hadn't just been the overactive imagination of a lonely child. After that day, his whole demeanor changed. He'd become softer with me. We started talking together, even laughing. It was as if some deity had overheard my childhood wish for a father who cared. But he never forgave himself for not going with her. He kept on drinking, and eventually, cirrhosis took him while I was in my first year of university. He'd never been so small before. His wizened, bald head peeking up from the draping covers. He looked so frail, having aged what looked like 20 years in just a few. His withered hand clasped mine, and he smiled over my shoulder at the empty corner of the hospital room. "We made a great kid, didn't we, Angie?" he remarked. I didn't have to turn around to see who he was addressing. She was already there. She'd always been. Despite the agony of the last few months of his life, my father had died smiling. That was 5 years ago. Although my grief has lessened with the passage of time, I still try to live my life for both of them, especially my mother. Whenever I see that pale, dark-haired figure glancing out from behind a corner or behind me whenever I'm confronted with a reflective surface, there's no more spine-prickling fear, nor any heart palpitations. Instead, I feel home. Sometimes I get angry at myself that it took so long for me to figure it out. She never wanted to hurt me. All she had ever wanted to do was hold me, like any mother would. And I ran away from her. No wonder she wept. She still comes at night to sing to me. I don't flinch away whenever her broken hands tussle my hair, instead letting a warbling lullaby wash over me and send me into blissful darkness. There was a time where I would have given everything that I owned to never see her again. Now, I beg her to stay. No matter how much I wish for it to be otherwise, by the time the morning streams through my half-closed blinds, she's long since disappeared from this world. But my eyes always still burn with tears.